This podcast takes you into the rarely discussed realm of the personal decisions leaders have taken that have influenced their business decisions and developed them into the leaders they are today. The refreshingly honest experiences of those who have been very successful provide an insight into the challenges they faced, the successes they achieved, and the people who influenced them along their journey. Here's our host, Mark Silvera.
Welcome to Business Made Personal. This podcast is brought to you by the insurance industry's leading education and events provider, ANZIF, via their Careers in Insurance initiative. I'm Mark Silvera. Today, I have with us Jackson McDonald. Jackson is the National Distribution Manager at ProtectSure. The fellow graduated from Charles Sturt University in Bathurst with a double Bachelor of Business Marketing and Communications Advertising degree. His work experience ranges from journalism to pouring beers in pubs, and he was introduced to insurance by his mother, Gabrielle McDonald, who many people listening to this will know. He has held a number of temporary roles in the industry before deciding to join us in a full-time capacity as a broking assistant at GSA Insurance Brokers in 2016. Welcome to the program, Jackson.
Thanks, Mark. I appreciate you having me on.
Hey, Jackson, I mentioned your mum, Gabrielle McDonald, who is the MD of ProtectSure, if I've got that right.
Yeah, that's right.
Let's talk a little bit about that. So did you feel a sense of obligation to actually get into the insurance industry when you were a younger guy looking for a career?
I wouldn't say that there was really an obligation. It was very much something I knew was there in the background. You know, I was pretty across what mum did in her various roles that she held. I mean, my first real memory of her work was when she was at Allianz, and you know, I was sort of at that age where I was had a bit more understanding of what work was, but it was never really something that I saw myself getting into. I had a lot of other job prospects that I thought that I would eventually get into, and it wasn't really until I'd finished university and I'd done a placement in a marketing and advertising business that I then started to think about insurance as a potential career path to me, and probably had those more detailed conversations with mum about, you know, what opportunities there would be, whether it would be a brokerage or an insurer. And from that, it really just snowballed into eventually getting a full-time role at GSA and then to where I am now at ProtectSure working with her.
Oh, we'll get to some of that. I wanted to ask you about your background growing up. You're a Sydney-sider. What was your sort of family life like sort of when you were going through your sort of schooling and then, you know, developing your strengths?
Yeah, I was, both my sister and I had, we were really lucky growing up. You know, we had a very close-knit family. We all really got along well with each other. Mum is a big traveller. So, you know, from a young age, we were seeing a lot of the world and had some fantastic experiences. And, you know, we always lived in a really comfortable home. And so I think from that perspective, we were really quite lucky with our upbringing. You know, we spent a lot of time with our grandparents growing up, particularly, you know, after school. My dad actually used to work out the back of his mum's property. So, you know, we spent every day after school with our grandparents. And, you know, those little things I think have all contributed to the person that I am today. And I guess the emphasis that I put on family, and looking back, I wouldn't have had it any other way. So I really think that we had a fantastic upbringing, and we were really, really fortunate that our parents could provide the life that they did for us.
What did your father do for a living?
My dad was and still is a mechanic. So he pretty much, I think, left school in year 10 and decided to be a mechanic's apprentice and still does that to this day. And I think that's definitely where my passion for cars has come from. I don't think I had much choice there. But, you know, he's worked for himself for as long as I know, and he's always run his own business. And I can't see him doing anything else.
You know, it's really refreshing when you get someone that actually loves what they do. And, you know, your mother and your father are obviously classic examples of people that are involved in their specific part of the employment world and just take it to a whole new level. So, you know, I can see how that would have impacted you. I wanted to ask you about those younger years. Someone who was a major influence for you in those younger years?
Yeah, I'd have to say I couldn't narrow it down to one or the other, but it would be my parents, both of them, for different reasons. My dad, because he's the most selfless person I've ever met. He's always put other people before himself. And I think, you know, growing up when I started, you know, in my early 20s and I was really becoming an adult myself, you know, looking back at what qualities I really appreciated and strived to be myself. And it was a lot of qualities that Dad had. And one of them was, you know, he was very selfless. He was always family first. And, you know, he wouldn't think about himself for a second before he thought of others. So I think that as I started growing up and becoming an adult, I really took that on board a lot more and strived to do the same. Mum was a big influence because she was extremely motivated and determined in what she did with work. And she was also able to balance that with family really well. You know, she held some pretty big roles when I was growing up and she had to travel quite a bit. But I never look back on my childhood thinking that she wasn't there. She was always there for the important occasions and always made sure that she made time for us. So I was able to look at her and go, well, you know, you can have a really, really successful career. And, you know, particularly being a woman as well, coming up during a time when it was probably a very male-dominated world, you know, she pushed a lot of barriers, I think. And I think looking back now, I'm really, really proud of what she's achieved. And it's great to see that someone can do that and not sacrifice family time because of it. So yeah, my parents were definitely the biggest influences on me for two different reasons, but both of those have sort of played a big part of, you know, my life as I sort of move into my, you know, now my late 20s and, you know, the person that I want to be.
And, you know, what you say makes perfect sense. I want to talk a little bit about you. You've done a couple of things prior to getting involved in insurance, as you mentioned. You said you've got passion for cars. You worked for Top Gear magazine. You worked for Repco. You worked for Uber brand and you pulled beers. At what point did you decide, you know what, this insurance caper is really something I want to investigate and invest my time in?
Well, I think when I first left high school and was looking at university degrees, I was really determined to be a journalist. I felt that was what I wanted to do. And that's where the Top Gear work came into it because I loved cars and I loved writing about them. And so I was looking for universities that offered journalism and Charles Sturt was one of the most renowned for that. And I remember having a meeting with the course director there and he said, okay, yep, you know, you can write about cars, but the life of a journalist is that, you know, Top Gear could close down and the next week you've got to go and you've got to start writing for Woman's Day or for New Idea. Do you think that you could do it? And I said, oh, well, no, I really just like writing about cars. And he pretty much said to me, I think you need to find another career to pursue. And so that's when I started thinking, okay, well, what else could I do? And I remember Mum saying to me that if you're not too sure what you want to do, go and study marketing, because at the end of the day, irrespective of whether you're working for a business that offers a service or a product, you're selling something. You might be selling your own brand. You might be selling something physical, something intangible, but learning how to market something, understand what people need and how to advertise it to them is invaluable, irrespective of what you do. So that's sort of what led to the marketing degree. And naturally, that particular course was really, I guess, catered towards an advertising space. So advertising agencies and working in marketing for a company. And I did try that for a bit. You know, I did a placement with Uber brand as part of my degree. And I had a couple of friends that were in a couple of years ahead of me at university that had gone into that world. But I just didn't see it as the career path for me. I just wasn't finding what I was looking for. And, you know, naively at that age, you don't really know what you're looking for, but there was just something in the back of my head that said, I don't think this is really what I want to do for the rest of my life. And I just sort of thought, you know, I can see what Mum does and the opportunities that she's had, you know, what's the harm in giving it a go? And so I initially thought that broking was going to be the best place for me because one of my biggest skills was that I could talk to people and that I could build rapport with people. And as a broker, you know, you're out getting clients and you're putting on new business. So you've got to not only have a relationship with the insurer, but you've got to have it with your insurers and your underwriters as well. So I just thought that naturally that was going to be the best fit for me. So that's what really enticed me to go and start applying for insurance broking jobs. And I asked around. I'd known a couple of Mum's friends for many, many years, people like Carly Griggs and Rebecca Wilson, I've known for a long time. And so I was asking them, you know, what sort of places could I be looking for work? And GSA was one that did come up from a few people. So I just put my resume in. I just said, hey, you know, I'm out of university. I'm looking for a job. What have you got that's available? And at that time, they had a HR manager, a really, really lovely lady that I think she was putting my resume in front of people and going, we need to try and give this guy a job. And she facilitated a vacancy for me and it sort of went from there.
So you made an interesting comment. You said you weren't sure what you were looking for, but you knew you hadn't found it. So have you found it in insurance?
I think so, definitely. And for me, looking back now, what I was really looking for is a industry that I could feel comfortable to be myself and work with people that I not only just get along with, but can call mates. And I definitely see that now where I wake up and I'm excited to go to work. You know, I've got to travel a lot with what I do, but I'm pretty confident now that any city that I turn up in, I've got people there that I know really well, that I work with well. So it's never a chore to go to work. And, you know, that's saying a lot when you're getting up at 5:30 in the morning and getting home at 10 o'clock at night. You know, you need that to be able to sustain that kind of lifestyle. And I just absolutely love all the people that I deal with. And I can look at it now and go, you know what, if I'm in this industry for the next 40 years, I think I'll be really happy because I've got a great network around me. I think insurance offers a lot of opportunities. If you look at particularly the insurance agency space, as well as the AR space with brokers, there's just so much opportunity for people to own their own business, get equity in business, to take on a lot of ownership and accountability. And you don't see that in a lot of other industries that I'm aware of. So I think it's really unique. And I think if more of the world found out about it, there'd be a lot more applications for insurance jobs. But I can just see that, you know, I could change my mind tomorrow and go, you know what, I want to go back to marketing. And I know that there will be an opportunity for that in insurance somewhere.
Yeah, I always say it doesn't matter what qualification you've got, there is a job for you in insurance. And it doesn't matter what qualification you haven't got, there's a job for you in insurance.
Absolutely. Yeah. And I think it's really unique.
And you hit the nail right on the head when you were talking about networking. So one of the things that people think is that because it's insurance, it's this huge monolith of an organization with a squillion people, et cetera, et cetera. Have you found that's the case?
I haven't really worked for a really large international where you might get a feeling like that. But it's really interesting because even from back in my broking days and you're dealing with the likes of the Zurichs and the Chubbs, you still had that group of people that you were really familiar with. And to you, they represented that brand. So it never really felt like a business or a team was too far out of touch. I mean, I think in insurance, there's got to be at minimum 2 degrees of separation. So if there's someone that you need an introduction to, there's likely someone already in your network that knows them. And, you know, you can look at your LinkedIn profile now and most of the people that come up, you know, you've got a mutual connection somewhere. So I actually feel that it is a massive industry. There's a lot of people in it, but because we prioritize networking so much and there a lot of businesses push going out and making connections, it makes it quite a small industry.
I want to go back to your university days. You decided to pack your bongos from Australia and head over to Paris. When you got over there, did you encounter challenges that you hadn't expected?
Probably not challenges that I hadn't expected, but they were probably harder than I expected them to be, to sort of rephrase that a little bit. You know, I was quite naive about going over there and thinking, you know, everyone loves the Australian accent. I don't need to learn French, and very quickly learned that the French don't like that, the Parisians anyway. So that was quite a reality check. And it's a very different story going somewhere like that, not knowing the language as a tourist, because in a lot of those, you know, your cafes and your restaurants, they expect that there might be a bit of a language barrier. But when you've got to go to an immigration office and sort out your visa, and you've then got to go to a bank and open up a bank account to get a visa, and at that stage, they've got no interest whether you know French or not. It's like, this is the procedure. This is how it's done. That was a big wake-up call. So that was probably the difficult part of going, okay, you know, how am I going to navigate this with very little French without coming across as rude or ignorant and doing it in a very polite way? And I managed to do that. I made some really, really great friends over there that were locals, and they would come to the visa office with me and help translate. And so I just surrounded myself with people that could be my support network over there. So yeah, it was probably, that was something that I didn't think would be as bad as it would be. And even just things like, you know, you're living on your own for the first time and you're so separated from your rest of your family. You know, when you get sick, it's like, okay, well now I've got to try and how do I find a doctor that speaks English? You know, and little things like that, which aren't a big deal when you're at home in an environment that you know, but all of a sudden you're overseas, you don't have any family over there. It's a language that you don't know. Those little things become bigger hurdles to jump. So that's probably what I didn't expect.
And how is your French now, mate?
It's about as good as the day that I left for Paris, which means I know how to order a beer, and that's about the extent of it.
All you got to do is work out how to order a croissant and you're done. Talk to me about the young insurance professionals. You've been part of that group since 2017. And correct me if I'm wrong, but currently you're the Australasian president. I want to know why you're involved with that group.
I pretty much got involved with the IPS almost immediately after joining the industry. Back then I was young and my biggest goal was to meet as many people as I could. I wanted to make friends. I wanted to make connections. And that was something that Mum had really sort of emphasized to me. She's like, just try and meet as many people as you can. You never know when one day, you know, they might be your competitor now, but they'll be your customer the next. So she really encouraged me to go out and build a network. And I'd learnt about young insurance professionals, and it was obviously a network that was catered for young people and people that maybe had sort of 0 to 3 years experience in the industry. And I thought, perfect, this is great for me. It's something that's catered to my position. And I was just hungry to learn. So rather than just go to the events, I thought, you know what, I'm going to put my hat in the ring to see if I can be a part of this and contribute back to the industry. So they had a role that was going for, I think it was called public relations. So essentially you were the contact point for Insurance News Magazine and those sort of publications to advertise your event. And I was in that role for a little bit, but you know, I remember saying to them, like, your branding is really old. Like, this needs a bit of a rejig. So the old marketing hat came on and I was like, we need to, you know, give it a new look and bring it to, you know, the modern world. And so I took on a bit more of a role then, and it just became this process of stepping up and trying to get as involved as I could to, you know, where I am now as the president across Australia and New Zealand. And it's really hard for me to comprehend that it's been so long that I've been involved, you know, since 2017, pretty much since the start of my career. It still scares me a bit that it's been that long, but I am so appreciative of it. You know, I know that that has doubled my network at least over the time I've been involved. And you know, there are people that I've met through YIPS that are now brokers that I deal with, or they are fellow insurers that I meet at conferences and expos. So it's one of the best things that I've done, not only for my career, but I think personally, you know, I've got exposed to managing teams of people and essentially running a business at a very, very young age. So it was a bit of a baptism of fire to try and understand how to put a budget together and, you know, oh, we have to go and ask sponsors to help support us every year and put a business plan together. And doing that in your early 20s is pretty daunting. But I think that has set me up so well for the rest of my career, if that's something that I like to do.
So speaking of your current work, I'm just wondering, do you have any mentors that are guiding you in your journey, your career journey at the moment?
Yeah, I definitely do. Another thing that Gab always said to me was to try and find mentors that you really admire. And even if you don't have a specific challenge in mind that you want their help on, just keep in contact with them. And you never know when they'll have some advice that you'll really need to hear. And you never know when you just want to bounce questions off someone. So I have always been very aware of that. When I first started at GSA, my first manager, who was a guy by the name of Steve Allen, he was a mentor for me. And outside of our work tasks, we used to sit down for coffee once a week and I'd just ask him about, you know, general career questions and general development questions. So he was probably the first mentor that I really had. And he left the business. And a short time after that, I moved from GSA to Protecsure. And the obvious choice would have been to get Mum to mentor me, seeing as though she does so much of it in the industry anyway. But she said, look, you need to get someone outside. You know, there are going to be some things that, you know, I'm not only your mum, but I'm your boss. And there are going to be some things that you don't want to talk to me about. So I definitely do have a really great network of people I can reach out to. I've met up with Dave Porteous from Market Lane a number of times. He's someone that I really admire. I think I knew him from the Brooklyn days, back when GSA owned Brooklyn. I first met him there and saw the business that became and also what he's done with Market Lane. So I really think that he's quite a pioneer. And I think that there's a lot that I've learned from him. And I've also got a lot of friends that are of a similar age group to me, but I think that they've got much more experience and I still learn a lot from them. And yeah, probably the mind that really comes to mind is Evan Ainsley, who works for Lloyd's. He's just the type of person that can walk into a room and he knows absolutely everyone and he knows everything about the insurance industry. And so if I've ever got a question going, hey, like, I, you know, what do you think of this? Or what do you think of that? Or you need to just bounce an idea off I always know I'm going to get a pretty straightforward answer from him and I'm going to get the truth. So it's not really a formal mentorship, but I think that he's just got so much knowledge and he gives me a lot of time. So I'm really lucky that I've got a couple of people that I can call on, you know, depending on, you know, what I'm needing a bit of guidance on. And I think that that's really great to just have so many different people with lots of different backgrounds and experiences to draw on.
And I think there's this sort of belief from people outside the industry that everybody in the industry is competing against everybody else. So, you know, you don't get the time of day. I haven't found that. I don't know what your view is.
No, I don't really. I mean, I'm sure that there are, you'll probably find that somewhere, but I think that that would be the minority. I think that in the grand scheme of things, you know, some of my best mates are other underwriters that we probably have competing business lines with. But at the end of the day, everyone's here, everyone is doing a job and they want to enjoy themselves. And I think that we all just know that we're here to do business. And from my experience, people are very good at separating the business from the personal. So if you're friends with someone, irrespective of what happens with work, you know that you can always go offline and have a very different interaction with them in a personal sense. And, you know, I've seen that not only with myself, but other people in Protectual that have really good friends in the industry, and you might have a particular issue with them on a work front, but we're very good at switching that off and going, well, let's just put that aside. We know that's business. How are you going? How's the family? You know, where are you off to on holidays? So I think that's what I've noticed is there's, you know, it's healthy to have competition. It's healthy to have other businesses and other people making you want to do better. So I think competition's great, but I, from what I've seen, it's never vindictive. It's healthy competition.
So Jackson, I wanted to ask you about your current role. What would you say is the best part of what you're currently doing?
I think it's a very, very unique role because it's quite a big job for a small business in terms of if you look at distribution teams with a lot of insurers, you know, they've often got 20 people that are BDMs, all allocated states or particular networks, whereas with us, it's me and I look after everyone. So I think the best part of that is that I just get to see and meet everyone from all facets of the country, business sizes, you know, you deal with the internationals, the AR that runs his own business, and you get to see them in lots of different beautiful parts of the country. Yeah, I've got to go to every state and see some amazing places, and that's all thanks to work. So I think that the combination of those two things of just really getting to appreciate Australia, the diversity of not only the places, but the people too, and the insureds that they look after, the clients that they have, there's just so much variety in this role. And I think that's what I really appreciate the most about it. And looking too, you know, it's really special to work in a family business, and it doesn't always work. And I'm sure that there are lots of people listening that may have given that a go and it didn't work out. And, you know, that's fine. But we're quite lucky that, you know, Mum and I get along really well from a work perspective. And I think that that's something, you know, when we look back in 20 years' time, we'll go, that was a really, really special opportunity that we had. You know, we got to spend a lot of quality time together. We got to do some amazing things. And it's something that really money can't buy. So it's really, really a great opportunity.
If I asked you the opposite of that, what's the most challenging part of what you do?
Well, the challenging part is that it really is only one person doing it. We can't spread the workload as much, particularly when it comes to the travel. It means that you do miss out on quite a bit at home. You know, there have been times I've missed birthdays, I've missed big milestones, I've missed anniversaries. And a lot of that's because, you know, we've got a conference and it starts on a Sunday. So I need to get there on Saturday. And it does cut into a lot of personal time. So that's something that, you know, I had to be quite prepared for. It really is a shame when that happens. As much as you try to make it work, sometimes it doesn't. But that's probably got to be the most difficult aspect of it, is that you are away from home a lot. You don't get to see your friends, your family, your partners as much as maybe someone who does more of a 9-to-5 office-based job. But it's very much a double-edged sword. There's great parts of this role, but you just have to understand that, you know what, maybe you're going to be away for that birthday and you just have to make up for it some other way.
Absolutely. And I know what you mean, having done a little bit of traveling, but the offsetting part of that is that you get to do some of those things that you mentioned and see places and things that you wouldn't normally get a chance to see. I want to talk a little bit about failures. I have a theory that, you know, the more people fail, the quicker they learn. Have you experienced that point where you felt like you failed at something, but it's given you a whole new set of circumstances off the back of it?
I don't think there's been one very specific circumstance or incident that's made me feel that. But I think in, you know, when I look back particularly to my early career and especially when I first got involved with the Yips, I had this feeling that I needed to be everyone's friend. I needed everyone to like me. And if they did like me and I was their friend, that was going to be great for business. So I invested a lot in my relationships with other people, even to the point where there were maybe some people that I probably shouldn't have. And I found out the hard way that I really wasted my time because I couldn't end up relying on that person. So that was a really hard lesson to learn, because you invest personally so much in that and you have this expectation of what you're going to get out of it. And when that doesn't happen, it's really deflating. So I would call that a failure. And it's something that I have learnt on. You know, it's like, it's great to have friends and it's great to have people that like you, but it's not the be all and end all. At the end of the day, you have to do your job and you have to do it well, but it doesn't mean that you've got to be their best mate and you have to think of them like that as well.
And I think there is that line, isn't there, between business professional and personal friendships.
Absolutely. And I think there's a place for both. I think that you can have a personal relationship with someone and make that work in business. But, you know, there are going to be people that you have to deal with that you may not get along with and they may not get along with you, but there's just work that has to be done and you have to find a way to make that work. So I think there's places for both, but it was just a big learning curve to sort of go, okay, you know, maybe I don't need to spend so much time trying to build a relationship that is maybe never going to happen and is not going to have the desired results. You just have to identify, okay, yep, this is a business relationship and this is what we need to this work and that's that, and there's nothing wrong with that.
I want to change tack a little bit, if I could, Jackson. I wanted to ask you, one of the problems that the insurance industry has is actually attracting younger people into it. Do you have a view on two things? One is why that's the case, and the second part is there anything you think we should be doing differently?
I think the reason that we struggle to attract young talent is because I don't think young people really understand what a job in insurance means. And it's funny because I was just having an interview with a young man this morning about a role in insurance, and he actually asked, he said, well, what do you do? Like, do you sell car insurance? What's it look like? And it's hard because when you think of a 16, 17-year-old, their first interaction with an insurance company is when their car insurance comes through. And it costs an arm and a leg because you're on a casual rate and you never really get anything tangible from it. You know, at that young age, you don't have an idea of what it's like to have an accident and be financially exposed. So from a young age, it's just a nuisance, right? So why would I want a job in insurance when I think this is what it looks like? I've always had the opinion that it's about encouraging people to look at what the opportunities are in insurance. And, you know, like I mentioned before, it doesn't matter whether you're into accounting, whether you're into marketing or the technical side of things when it comes to actuaries, there's a role for everyone in insurance. And the opportunity is so great that you can make a network of connections and they can be useful to you irrespective of what job you've got. And I think that's something that when you talk to young people that are interested in it or have thought about a career in insurance and you explain it like that, you can see them really start to go, okay, look, I think this is something that I can see myself doing. So I think a lot of it has to do with just trying to communicate the breadth of opportunity that we have in insurance. And it's very hard to get away from that stigma of it being, you know, your car insurance, your CTP, workers' comp, because it's such a big part of the industry. But unfortunately, that's just what young people first interact with. So it's about going, yep, that is insurance and it's important, but this is everything else.
What you say, I think we should bottle that and sell it, mate, because you're right on the money in terms of what you're talking about there. You have now been in insurance for, what, 9 years? And obviously, you're very well known because of your involvement with the Young Insurance Professionals, with your involvement with ProtectSure. Do you think being involved in insurance has changed you personally, Jackson?
Yeah, absolutely. I think that both of the roles, the full-time roles that I've had, as well as just the people that I've met, has meant that I've really had to nurture an emotional intelligence. You know, both of my roles have been very much about relationships and being empathetic whether it's an insured that's suffering a loss or whether it's a broker who's got a lot of pressure from a client. It's about putting yourself in their shoes. And I think that that has definitely also then played a role in my personal life. And it's something that I can attribute work to, because you're almost forced to sort of go, okay, like if I want to do this role well, I have to understand what that person's going through. And similarly with young insurance professionals, you know, you're dealing with volunteers that are doing YIPS work outside their 9-to-5 jobs as well as outside their personal obligations. So if you've got someone coming to you going, look, I'm really, really stressed and they're frantic, it's like, okay, look, I have to put myself in that person's shoes and I have to understand what they're going through. And that is something that I've applied in my personal life as well. And I think that work really developed that for me unconsciously as well. It wasn't something that I'm like, oh, yeah, I'm learning this and I know it's going to be important. It's something that reflecting back on it now, I sort of go, I can't believe that this was all bubbling under the surface that I didn't know I was even learning and how important it is for me today.
And it's interesting, isn't it, the stuff that you pick up over time. I mean, in my case, it's managing people. And in the good old days, it was, you know, if you were being a real draconian boss, that you were doing the right thing. Whereas these days, it's more, much more inclusive. It's much more community related. It's much more participatory.
Yeah, it is. And for the better as well, I think that it's about now understanding that you could have a team of 5 people and each of those 5 people need to be or like to be managed in different ways. And they have different needs in work and they have different needs in their personal life. So it's, you end up having to put on a couple of different hats, particularly when you're in a management role. But it's not about, well, this is my style and this is how I like it. It's like, well, you know, this is how I work, but how can I make that work for you as well? So it's very much more inclusive in that sense. And there's a lot more awareness about, particularly when you're managing staff or even just when you're working with colleagues, it's sort of like, okay, well, I might work this way, but I know that my colleague likes to work that way. There's much more awareness about that, I think.
And if you were able to go back to that young man that was looking to be a journalist, and Jackson, you were able to give him a little bit of advice, what would it be?
When I was younger, I was always the type of person that thought I knew what I wanted my career to look like. You know, I was the type of person that when I first got my role at GSA, I was like, okay, by 25, I'm going to have this job. And then by 30, I'm going to have this job. And this is where I want to be when I'm 40. And what I've realized is that really blinds you to other opportunities. If you're just hell focused on one particular path and that's where you think you're going to be, you walk away from a lot, but then you also really set yourself up for disappointment if that doesn't happen. And sometimes it doesn't. You know, when you're a young person, you know, you think you can be the CEO after 5 years experience, and that's not the reality. So I think that my advice to my younger self would be, you know, relax, take it easy and be open-minded, you know, just work really hard in the job that you're at. And if you do that, opportunities will come to you. And it might be something that you've never considered before, but it could change your life. Really big country music fan. And one of my favorite songs, you know, there's a line in there that says, be where your boots are at. And it's all about just being present to where you are at the moment, appreciating that and leaving an open page for what tomorrow and the next years look like. So I think that would be really, really beneficial for me to have heard back when I first started my career.
I've got a couple of final questions for you before we let you go, Jackson. If you were able to give someone coming into the industry a little bit of advice, apart from what you've just mentioned in terms of your, you know, keep your options open, what advice would you give them for them to maximize their start in insurance?
I think based on my experience, I think that the best advice I could give was just to meet as many people as you can, irrespective of whether you think that they have will have dealings with you in the current day. Like I said before, you know, there's a lot of, when I was broking, there were insurers who are now brokers that are my clients. And so it's one of those industries where people move around a lot and you never know if someone's going to be your client or they're going to be your boss or they're going to be the head of your security. And so it's just about meeting as many people as you can, broadening that network, because you just never know when you're going to run into people in this line of work.
Thank you so much for being on Business Made Personal, Jackson. Thank you so much for lending us your ears. Please remember to click follow on your podcast app or subscribe at bmppodcast.com.au so we can give you a sneak peek of our next guest. Until next time, I'm Mark Silvera, and you've been listening to Business Made Personal.